Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan, joined by Nathan. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Man, we just finished up the X-Men one, got that up there, and we've already, in our very first couple weeks, have our first bonus episode. We're doing 2 in 1 week. This is a bonus one for us. We're going to be talking about The Nice Guys, going to be talking about Angry Birds, and we're going to be talking about beer. So super excited about that. I guess to kick us off, we'll go ahead and we'll start with some beer. You know, you're headed out to the
beer
movie.
Beer will be best before Angry Birds.
Yeah.
If you're a parent.
Make sure you have plenty of beer. Today I'm gonna be talking about three breweries. I think almost everything these guys make are good. I think, you know, there are some caveats in there, but almost everything these three make are good. And within these three breweries, I'm going to be highlighting three specific beers themselves. So the first one, these are, I'm just going to say these are all West Coast breweries. Last time we did some beer stuff, I did Flying Dog and I did Trogues, and those are both East Coast breweries. So now we'll do some West Coast. The first one is by Green Flash. Like I said, Green Flash, they make just good stuff all around.
Green Flash is awesome.
Yeah. They just really, really good. I can't think of a bad beer that I've had by them. And I'm sure many people would be like, oh, I have, you know. But to me, you know, it's just they're a solid company. Anything that they come out with, I'm going to pick up and I'm going to buy. The beer that I want to highlight from them is called La Freak. It's a newer one that's come out. It is a year-round one, and it comes out in like the 22-ounce bottles. So
nice.
Sometimes, you know, that might deter people from getting it. It's like, well, it's not a six-pack. It's only a 22-ounce. Look, at 9.2%, you don't need a six-pack.
Just roll the paper bag halfway down, and you're good to go.
Exactly. That's right. And one of the things that I enjoy about this beer is you start off, it's a Belgian style triple beer, which means it's essentially been triple brewed, adds a little bit of a sweetness characteristic to it. You almost get some apple cider characteristic coming off of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds intriguing.
Yeah. So it really adds that almost sweet characteristic to it. Belgians are great for doing almost anything you want to them. They're kind of like lagers in that regard. If you want to change up the profile and do some crazy stuff with it, a Belgian style is the way to go. So, you know, for those people who enjoy brewing beers in their basement, or, you know, when you see a Belgian style that has something else in it, it really adds to the flavor. So like lambics have a typical like Belgian base, and then they're brewed with fruit. So you get, you know, like some of those sweet sour notes coming off of them.
Now, would you say that because I've had several lambics, would you say that the Lafrique is similar to a lambic? Or
it's not going to be similar to a lambic. No. You are definitely going to get that beer flavor
sort of
coming
Belgian,
off of it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the lambics are very sweet and fruity.
Yeah, very fruity. Well, you mentioned the cider, but these are more like cider notes than full-fledged.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. So I guess what I mean by cider is you're almost getting like that apple characteristic to it. Not so much like that cider experience, but you get those notes and hints of apple coming through that are remnant of the cider.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. In this particular one, it actually has some really good malty notes coming off of it. So for those of you who enjoy those malts, for those who aren't as beer savvy, you know, you can get like chocolate malts or coffee malt notes coming off. Just really, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe a malt to those people out there.
It's not for me. It's like it's not the primary flavor of something,
yeah.
And it's not. I wouldn't qualify as the. You would talk about notes of something. It's not exactly the aftertaste, but it's that lingering sort of depth that the beer has, where you don't necessarily pick up on the chocolate or the coffee immediately. But it's one of those things that
It's going to be subtly in there blending in with all the other
flavors. If it's done well. But I've had some that are like
not
off-putting because the result is bitterness. But if you've done it right, it's like there's an aroma of that to it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So this one, you're going to get really nice orangey notes coming off of the nose of it. So as you're smelling it, and really, you know, the way beer is to be experienced is it's a total sensory thing. You're not just going to drink it, swallow it, gulp it, and be done with it. There is the initial aroma that comes off the beer that you're looking for, and that's going to enhance your drinking experience. So you're looking for those aromatic notes of orange.
Green Flash is always really good for that. I spend more time smelling that beer sometimes than drinking it.
Yeah, and it's got you know, it's like people who enjoy, you know, wines or coffees. Very similar with beer, and you're right. Green Flash does have just very nice aromas coming off of them, and nice to just sit there and sniff. And then, you know, having that orange as you're smelling it is also going to some of those citrusy notes are going to come out as you're drinking it too. In the proper way to drink anything that you're really looking to get a full experience is as you take a sip, exhale through your nose, and that actually enhances the palate because your palate. Really the flavors come out in the smell of it. You know, when you hold your nose, when you're eating something awful, you know, that really does help because you're not getting the aroma of what's coming in.
You only do that for like Budweiser.
Yeah. Well, who drinks Budweiser? So, you know, you're really going to look for that nice citrus kind of finish coming off of it. So this really does make for a nice year-round drinking beer because you're getting some of those malts coming in. In wintertime, it's great because it doesn't feel as totally light and, you know,
the apple
refreshing.
Sort of fall,
exactly.
And the citrusy summer.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, this is really, again, anything
a
by
beer
Green
for
Flash,
all seasons.
But that's right. It is. but Le Freak is going to be one that you're going to want to take a look at and see what's out there.
The only awkward part of that is asking for it. Where do you keep Le Freak?
That's right. Well, you know, it's better than Duclaw's Dirty Little Freak.
That's very true. Yeah. And the peanut butter one.
Yes.
Sweet Baby Jesus.
Sweet Baby
yeah.
Jesus.
Come on. This is a trap all around.
It is. Yeah, it definitely is. So that's the first one. Second one that I want to recommend, and this one, this company has been around for years and is so good. Anchor Brewing Company.
Yes, good choice.
Yeah, Anchor is, it's one of the better ones out there. Again, just all around, you pick up an Anchor beer. They do their Christmas series, which is fantastic. Their Christmas ones tend to have some nice, rich, almost piney notes to them. So almost like you're drinking a gin. So those really come through some years better than others. But on whole, just very nice. And the one I want to highlight from them is their flagship one, Anchor Steam. This one is just fantastic. It's got more of an amber color to it. So more of your amber type ale.
It's kind of a good casual beer sort of like I feel like.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be nice. You know, it's going to be a little creamier than some of the other ones. It's got really rich, thick flavor coming from it.
It makes it really smooth. I think that's the thing. It's like people who don't like some of the heavier, creamier beers tend to actually like this one. My family.
Agreed. Yeah. And I would definitely agree with that. I think, you know, maybe one of the closest things you'll find would be like a Newcastle. So if you were looking
comparison.
To, yeah, something in my opinion that's better than Newcastle, but you know,
I would say I'd actually argue this is a step above Newcastle.
I think it is as well. But if you like that flavor coming off of Newcastle, the Anchor Steam is definitely worth checking out. And again, Anchor Brewing Company, you know, any of their beers that you pick up, I think are just done well And you're
they
not
have cool packaging too. Not that packaging is everything, but I really like their design and their stuff.
Well, and I can't tell you how many times I worked in the store and people would come in and be like, I'm looking at the package because that's how I choose my beverages.
Sometimes that works. Sometimes it does not. That's right.
Sometimes it bites you in the butt. So yeah, definitely Anchor Brewing and then, Steam Beer. You know, this is going to be one that, on a hot summer day, maybe you want to steer clear of, but, I think for a cooler day, you know,
it's good, like pub beer. Too,
yeah,
like
exactly.
To order if places that have it, to carry it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really, really good point there. Last one. And this is probably the one I'm going to spend the most time on because, this is one of my favorite breweries of all time. And I can say for me personally, that above the others, I've not, unless the beer's been out of date, I've not had a bad beer from them. And that's Stone Brewing.
Oh, yes.
Stone is just fantastic. The one I'm going to highlight from them, is Arrogant Bastard. I'll tell you what, people. You go into your local store and you get Stone Brewing and you get Arrogant Bastard. The label alone is worth what you're going to pay for this beer. It is the most condescending label to any other beer out there, and it's fabulous. You know, the tagline for Arrogant Bastard is hated by many, loved by few. And you just go in and you read that label. I'm not going to give it away. And it is just the best thing in the world. My wife, who is not a drinker, goes in. If the name of the beer wasn't Arrogant Bastard, she would read that label to her students, because it's so well written and so well done, just promoting itself as the ultimate all time beer.
Perfect gift if you want to send a message to someone.
That's right. You know, they have the definition of arrogance right there on the bottle, the act or quality of being arrogant, haughty, undue assumption, overbearing conceit. And they just proudly admit that this beer is the best hoppy beer you will ever have. Some of the other ones, that are pretty cool. Stone Go-To IPA.
Yes.
It's a nice one because it's not as overbearingly hoppy as, well, of course, as Arrogant Bastard.
Yeah, that one's intense.
That is, yeah.
But good, intense.
Exactly. But it's got those nice, well-balanced notes of the pine and the citrus that you would expect to want to get out of an IPA. More complex beer, but
it's
not
kind of like the training wheels.
Exactly.
For Stone. Like,
yes.
You need to start somewhere and you're not sure how you feel about hoppy beer. Maybe you shouldn't even start with Stone, but if you do, start with the Go-To IPA.
Start with the Go-To. That's right. And they've just done one not too long ago, came out with it, and I'm going to shoot myself because I can't remember it, but it's their reduced gluten one. So for those of you who have issues with gluten, this one is reduced in gluten. Very good. I think it's like less than 0.1%. And I can say this on air because, you know, I'm not selling this stuff anymore. But for those of you people who I have celiac disease, like, there is such a small percentage of people who can't actually handle gluten. So I don't want to hear, well, I can't buy that and drink it because there's, like, you know, 0.1 percentage of gluten in it. You know, it's ridiculous. And I have several friends and family members who are in the medical profession who have confirmed this for me, that the percentage of people out there who have celiacs is so low. People are just on this gluten-free junk. But this beer, and again, I'm trying to remember the name and I'm kicking myself because I can't. But it's worth it. It's a good, like, when you look at all the beers out there that are reduced gluten or gluten free, this is one of the best up there. And part of that is because Stone just makes such quality stuff. And then every year, at least once a month, they're doing their monthly beers that come out. They're always putting out new and unique stuff. Along with the Arrogant Bastard series, they have Double Bastard, which is even hoppier, if you can believe it, than Arrogant Bastard is. And
I haven't had that one yet.
It's good. Actually, it's funny because the more hops you put into a beer, the sweeter and more mellow it is. So Double Bastard, while it's technically hoppier. It almost has a more mellow taste to it than the regular Arrogant does. And then of course they do their oak aged, which was good. I mean, it's definitely worth the experience, but I still preferred the regular Arrogant over the oak aged. And then if you look for their Enjoy By, if you can get Enjoy By, you don't need to get every single Enjoy By that comes out. It's the same beer brewed every month, just you're supposed to drink it before a certain date. And most people don't realize that. They're like, no, I thought they brewed a different one every month. No, if you go on the website, they tell you it's the same beer that they brew. It's just best drunk before the quote unquote expiration date, which that's a topic for another time about expiration dates on beer. But Enjoy By is a good beer. It's one that no pun intended, enjoy getting, whenever it comes out and you can get a hold of it. In Maryland, it's hit or miss when we can get it. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't, but still worth it. So those are my recommendations.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Nathan. I've had some of all of those. They're all really cool. And we were discussing offline about, doing a whole podcast sort of devoted to beers. We'll probably continue to do these where we feature some movie reviews and some beer and alcohol reviews at the same time. And we're even looking at maybe heading up to a brewery soon.
Yes.
Doing like a kind of walkthrough. Maybe we can get some interviews or something. And it'd be cool to start something either on the Facebook page or something. Maybe a local brew section where all of you, particularly those who aren't local, can kind of tell us what your favorites are and what you enjoy drinking, because this has been a good experience. Even last week, my sister came back from listen to the podcast and showed up with the Cryptic Red wine, which was kudos to you. That's a great one for just being able to talk about the whole experience. Yeah. The smelling of that one was awesome. Like, you could just sit there and smell that glass of wine without drinking it. Not that I didn't, but it was awesome.
Excellent. So glad you enjoyed it. So we want to go into our reviews. We're reviewing The Nice Guys. Nathan went to see that on Monday. We're reviewing Angry Birds. So Nathan, let's start with The Nice Guys, or do you want to start with
Angry Birds? Let's start with Angry Birds.
All right, let's start with Angry Birds.
Usher the children out of the room.
Okay.
To The Nice Guys.
There you go.
Well, not really, but it is a far more adult film than Angry Birds. Well, I don't know how much we talked about this last week when we did our summer preview, but we kind of talked about video games and what the experience of video games being adapted to movies. I think you put that picture up of Captain Picard with his hand in the air, and it said something like, when will they learn about adapting video games into big blockbuster productions? And this is barely a video game. I mean, Angry Birds is essentially a phone app game where you're tossing birds at pigs, you know, and now we have an entire feature length children's film about it. Somebody was talking recently and they said that they had taken a relative to the theater and the M&M's commercial had come on where they were enacting different things, and the relative was like, no, please let this not be a movie. Like, it's only a matter of time before we are adapting candy in the films. And Angry Birds is just about at that level. Unfortunately, it's not horrible.
Okay.
Which is about the best you're going to get me to say about this. But it's almost worse in the sense that it's very mediocre. It's clearly just a product that's been churned out. We've got a lot of popular voice actors. Mm-hmm. Jason Sudeikis is in here. Danny McBride. They even have a large sort of big mushy bird that kind of talks like Frankenstein, you know, or Lurch, you know, Frankenstein's monster, sort of like, voiced by Sean Penn. So, you know, an actor known for blowing his top. And of course, the birds get angry and freak out. And they are all attending anger management together, and they live on this island where these pigs come in, and the pigs are happy and nice and friendly to them to begin with. And then the secret is, it's not much of a secret, that they want to take the birds' eggs, potentially their children, and take them away and, I suppose, eat them. So that's a little dark for kids. They want to steal the eggs and take them away, and the birds are going to fight back and learn to channel their inner rage. It's a good positive message for children. Let's face it, the movie's not much about a message at all. It's not really much about laughter either. A lot of the jokes are just very clearly canned, pulled from other sources. Yeah. They try to have a sort of really tongue-in-cheek feel to it.
Sure.
This is probably the first movie that can be cited as fallout from the Lego movie. You know, gotcha. All the positive. Yeah. I really enjoyed the Lego movie, but this is the first movie I've seen recently where you can see a direct correlation of someone watching the Lego movie saying, I know what we need to do to make this marketable.
Right.
How can we take this toy, this thing that isn't really translatable to a movie, and make a movie out of it? Yeah. So they've tried to do the same thing with Angry Birds. They get a few jokes here and there, but again, the overall tone is strange.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite figure out if they were trying to make a movie about dealing with your anger or not. You know, Inside Out came along and dealt with emotions and sort of how do we process sadness.
Yeah.
Angry Birds looks like it could almost be another movie that talks about, well, what is anger and how you deal with it? But you're not going to get any of that. You're going to get pigs firing at birds and birds firing at pigs. Lots of potty humor jokes. You get a very weird Peter Dinklage cameo. He comes in as sort of wise old bird who is at the top of the mountain. And when they get to the Pool of Enlightenment, they realize as they're bathing in it, he's been urinating in it for years. You know, that's the height of the humor. That's the good stuff. So, you know, you're going to be... You may find you're taking your kids to go see it.
Sure.
It's not going to harm them. It's probably not going to harm you, but you're gonna glance at your watch a few times.
Sure.
But honestly, it is totally a product. I think if you are looking to take children to a movie, the idea is this is, you know, appropriate for much younger kids. But I'm not quite sure of that. Again, it's about on the Lego level. There are people who aren't going to necessarily want to take their kids to see some of that more kind of potty humor that is in the film.
Yeah.
Some of the darker stuff with the pig stealing eggs. I don't think it's a big deal, but it's definitely not this G-rated happy little picture that might be advertised. I think parents are far better off, as long as they can gauge the intensity level for their children, going to take them to see The Jungle Book, which is still in theaters, which is a marvelous movie.
Yeah.
Really good, well worth seeing. Again, it may not be for very young kids, but I'd argue that neither is really Angry Birds. It's definitely one to skip, as far as I'm concerned. So,
sure.
If we're looking at that, I would say Netflix it.
Netflix it.
At best. You know, it's a babysitter movie.
Sure. Fair enough. So let me just ask a couple questions. Hang on this for a little bit. So, yeah, you've already given your opinion, you know, skip it. If your kid wants to go see it, I mean, everything that I would gauge from the perspective of a parent would be, all right, if I'm going to take my kid to see it, you know, this is – at a matinee, this is probably, you know, $12-13 just to go see the movie for the two of us, you know, my child and myself. Do you think if they want to go see it, it's worth it at that point? Or do you think, no, it's still a waste of money, you still want to Netflix it?
One of the things I wonder about is how much the kids are going to be like into wanting to see the movie. And the truth of it is when you have and I know this with my kids, like they want to see a movie, going to see that movie, they enjoyed it. We took them to see the Chipmunks movie is a good example. I thought that movie was an abhorrent mess. And they enjoyed the Chipmunks and what they did. They completely forgot about it. Thankfully, they've never remembered that movie exists. But it was worth it for me to take them to see it.
To take them
I to suspect they'd have the same reaction to Angry Birds, you know, that they would probably enjoy it. It'd be very colorful. They'd find some of the humor funny. So you're going to know your kids. If your kids really want to see the movie and you are open to it, my experience has been you have a great time when your kids are having a great time, for the most part. So we always talk about that as critics. Oh, don't take the kids. But the kids aren't aware. If this movie's not on the radar, I think if you buy them the $3.99 fruit snacks of Angry Birds and let them shoot them at each other,
right.
You're going to have about the same quality, both nutritionally and entertainment-wise,
as you would for
the movie. Yeah, so I'm thinking you save it. We've got some stuff coming out this summer. I think it's going to be better for them.
Cool. And you did. You mentioned The Jungle Book, which you and I saw. You brought your son Jonathan to see that. And that was a great movie. And Jonathan, again, four, by the way, or will be four.
He's seen it twice now. In fact, my daughter, Izzy, who's two, really enjoyed it too. You know, the snake.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't really even do anything that creepy comes next in the movie. She was like, no, what about the snake? But after that, she was good. So
nice.
It's a good piece of filmmaking, I think.
And that one you and I were talking about before, you know, X-Men in 3D in the previous podcast. This actually, I think, is a movie that would be enjoyed in 3D.
Angry Birds?
No. Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's true. My experience with the 3D was a little off. I have glasses, so it's always a little bit harder.
Sure.
But Jon Favreau makes movies that kind of reach, like, he knows how to shoot around that kind of 3D. Yeah. So it was, it worked.
Yeah. So kids are done.
Yes.
You know, hey, if it, again, you know, if your kids want to see it this weekend, you know, and you want to take them to a movie, go ahead, matinee. Great. Now on to the adults. We got the nice guys. So, you know, Friday night, mom and dad want to go out, or, you know, Uncle Joe's looking to go see a movie or something like that. We got the nice guys coming out Friday. What do you think about that?
So this is the director, Shane Black. Last movie Shane Black directed was Iron Man 3, which I wasn't a huge fan of, but part of that was his sensibility mixed with that particular movie and the whole Marvel movie universe didn't quite mesh. Shane Black's mostly known for writing several movies in the 80s, including the Lethal Weapon movies, Last Boy Scout. He directed a movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang a few years back. And if you've seen those movies or aware of them, this is really going to be more of that. It's a return to a sort of, in just pure description of it, a cheerfully sort of R-rated action movie. So this movie, just warning right from the outset, you're going to, if you look at that little box, it tells what it's rated R for. They squeezed a lot of words in there. And it's rated R for pretty much everything. However, I would argue that the movie is not extremely exploitative in it. There is there's some excessive language and there's some violence. The film is about, it's Buddy. We always use the term buddy cop picture, but you basically got sort of Private Eyes in this arena. And it's a film that takes place in the 70s. So it's very much a period picture and it has that sort of scummy Los Angeles gritty crime feel. At the same time, the Shane Black is really trying to make a almost goofy slapstick comedy, which is an odd mix of things that very few people outside of the Coen brothers tend to get right, where they are mixing the gritty and the sort of grimy and even sort of scuzzy, both morally and even just environmentally. And what he's done here is tell a story that does take place in a very seedy environment, and it is very much a sort of classic pulp story. But it's done with two central characters that are really just super entertaining to watch, as much for the performances as for how Black sort of gets them into the orbit of these various sort of misadventures. If you've seen movies like The Big Lebowski, if you've seen movies like Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice, this is the kind of movie that is. There is violence. A part of the mystery takes place within the adult film industry, so there's a little bit of nudity as well. Again, these are not the primary elements of the film, but they do create this picture of a world that is very much broken, and that's something that's interesting about this movie that I wouldn't say is true of maybe some of Black's movies like Lethal Weapon, where some of the older action films where they were sort of very cheerful in their violence and very embracing of the over-the-top elements.
Yeah.
There's an interesting vibe in this. So the basic plot involves you've got two characters. Both of these characters are played by great actors. You've got, on one hand, you've got Russell Crowe, who, this is the movie I referred to where he looks like he's growing gracefully into John Goodman.
Yes.
And he's sort of the big hawking bear of a guy. And he's that no-nonsense character that if you saw the movie L.A. Confidential years ago, that was the underbelly of the 1940s criminal world. And that was another movie about a very broken, dark world that takes place in a noir universe. And most noir universes don't have heroes. They just, they're very much about, if you want to get into the elements of the fallenness of man or human depravity, these are characters who aren't really capable of being heroes because of their flaws and the things that keep them down. Noir often tends to be very dark without a lot of hope in it. So one of the elements that he bleeds in here is that there's an element of hope with two guys that really aren't concerned about being that good. Crow's character is Jackson Healy, and he's basically a bruiser. He's, if you've got your average PI, he's about three or four moral degrees under that. You know, he'll break your arm. He might not be happy about breaking your arm, but he'll break it.
Right.
You know, if he needs to put you out of your misery, he'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, and he ends up teamed up with, he's hired initially to help this young woman who's in the adult industry who needs sort of a bodyguard, and he crosses paths with the other character who's Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
And Gosling is very, gives a very interesting and strange performance here. He is basically a washed up, I don't know if washed up's the right term. He may have been a never been PI who he's kind of useless. He's also taking care of his young 13-year-old daughter who he's had because his wife died in a house explosion, which is interesting in and of itself. This is Holland March. He is a drunk, and he shows up most places drunk. Then what he proceeds to do, which isn't typical for these kinds of movies, is fall over pratfall style, as you would in like a Keystone Cops or a Abbott and Costello movie. There are scenes of him just rolling down hills and falling into dead bodies, like rotting dead bodies, and then doing the classic like Lou Costello thing where he puts his hand over his mouth and has like a silent scream, and then you know.
Right.
So there's a lot of physical humor in this coming from Gosling's character. These two guys team up together, and the third part of their triangle is really Gosling's daughter. And the young actress in the film does a great job of – she's basically the beacon of hope. Mm-hmm. So you have these characters who are very fallen, who are very broken, but who keep trying to bring up within themselves some kind of semblance of decency,
right,
or some semblance of goodness.
Sure.
The movie does an interesting job of pointing out how their sense of goodness or their concepts of decency are so frail that they aren't really good enough, that they're always a little too late. There's an opening scene in the movie. I don't think I'm really spoiling much because it gives a pretty good gauge of what you can expect from this movie. You've got this young boy. It's the classic sort of Norman Rockwell kind of.
Yeah.
He gets his glass of milk. He's got his pajamas on. He goes downstairs and he like gets one of his dad's adult magazines out and he's looking at it. And you're like, where is this going? And then a car smashes into the house. And then suddenly the same person he's looking at in this magazine, who he's ogling one moment, is now laying dead on the hood of the car in front of him. And he stands up and looks at her and takes his shirt off and like wraps it over her to cover her up. And it's a really good sort of encapsulation of, you know, not just content, what you expect from this movie, and the weird sort of dark humor, but also this idea that these characters take small steps towards decency in a world that is inherently broken. And they're just too little too late. You know, he's ogling the girl. Now he's covering her up, but she's dead on the car. There's not much, you know, this is a gesture that doesn't mean much in the long term. So there are some very interesting and I think thoughtful elements to this. There's a very wistful, almost sad sense to this movie that doesn't exist in some of those older action films.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get your money's worth between the banter between Gosling and Crow, who really brings some neat characters to life. And I think the characters are so strong, it's a shame that the mystery story really isn't all – it's very convoluted.
Sure.
It isn't all that interesting. Some of the action scenes, Gosling with his pratfalls and Crow with his gruffness are great. And they have one line where he says, well, we're going to catch the men who did this, and we'll do it at a discount rate. You know, and Crow says the first part, and the Gosling comes in and says the second part.
That's great. So, yeah, definitely a recommendation for a weekend movie coming out.
Yeah, I would say, again, you're going to use your own judgment on this.
Right.
It is an R-rated film. Be aware going in that that Black makes unapologetically adult films.
Yeah.
This is not a movie you're going to want to take your 13-year-old to see.
Yeah.
And it may not even be a date movie, depending on, you know, if you've seen other movies like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. My wife loved Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. We'll probably go see The Good Guys together. But again, don't miss the other elements that are under there, because I think there's some thoughtful stuff in it.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, we wanted to make this one short and sweet. You know, just a couple of beers for you, a couple movies for the weekend for you. And, you know, we're going to go ahead and sign it off. But before we do, in the words of Don Corleone, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. And we're signing off.
Good night.
Really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wayne?